you, Scott M. from the YDI, Urban Narcotics Anonymous, out of Indiana, PA.
I'm an addict. My name is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Grab my water. First, I'd like to thank the committee and everybody for thinking highly enough to ask me to speak at all, letting me come in these doors and all of that. This is my least favorite form of service to do. I've been really, really nervous since I was asked to speak, which was like 2 weeks ago. I gave a really good lead this morning to myself in my head, and I wish I could have recorded that one. This retreat, these picnics, all of these things are a huge part of the attraction that is in Narcotics Anonymous and why I got and one of the ways I stay clean. So this means a lot to me. So to qualify like I was taught to qualify, my clean date is October 24th of 2012. So we've got a little over 8 years clean, coming up on 9 years clean. We have that by myself. I couldn't get 5 minutes clean. I didn't want 5 minutes clean. I don't know where this is gonna go. It's been a while since I've spoke. This is the first time since the COVID shutdown that I spoke, and even before that, it was probably a year and a half, so this kind of feels like my first lead all over again. Even though it's not a lead, it's sometimes that's easier, sometimes it's not. Just a little background on me before we get too far into it. I don't identify as any particular type of addict. I used to say, like, I never turned down a drug unless I misunderstood the question. The problem, what I've come to understand through step work, is that just means I was like chasing feelings. And when I started using when I was at the age of 15, the first chemical I ever really put in my system was alcohol, and I got drunk on a dairy farm outside Evansburg, and you can just imagine like how sloppy and not fun that is, and I had a blast. It reduced all my inhibitions. It like let me have an excuse to like act how I wanted to act and shed all of these chains and things that I've had for a long time. And I truly believe I was an addict way before I ingested any chemicals. There's things and patterns in my life that prove that. But my love affair with chemicals and like why I started using was this euphoric feeling. Like the first time I used, it wasn't like I was stealing from my parents or doing all these dirty things that I eventually did later on in life. There was a love affair that I had with chemicals that lasted from the mid-90s until when I got clean in 2012. And there's things that have happened throughout that process that I use as excuses to use, or traumatic experiences that happened to me that caused me an inability to really get deep or look deep or to feel these feelings. So at some point in my using history, through a series of traumatic events, I started to use to not feel. So there's like a switch that flipped in there. And when you're just trying to get numb, there's never enough of anything, and it doesn't really matter what it is, uppers, downers, over the counter, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I was using to use, to not feel, and to like not feel like myself. I mean, at the end of my road, I was getting high $7-$8 at a time, probably shooting like makeup and Swiss Miss in my arm. Like, I know I wasn't buying real drugs, but there was like, oh, maybe they left a little bit of dope in this bag, the insanity that we have. I don't know. Our stories are all the same. They vary in geographical things and some of the things that happen to us, but that's just a little bit of background. But when I finally drug myself into the program, through a series of like painting myself into a corner with my family, I had to go to treatment, and because that was the only option. I went to treatment like a half a dozen times, off and on, different stays, different places, some nice places in Florida, some not so nice places, not so far from here. The reality is whenever, you know, they say when like the pupil is ready, the teacher will show up. And through the course of all of those rehabs, like in number four or five, I'm telling my parents, like, well, they all say the same thing. Like, I don't know why I need to go again, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is they all say the same thing because it works. It's just a fact of when we show up and when we're really willing to put the work in and dig deep and understand, like, the root of my addiction. That's where I had to get to. It wasn't like the only drug problem I had is when I ran out. So what I had to get to the root of was like why I was trying to use drugs and all these feelings. And it was like, okay, let's look at this surface level event that happened, like, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is. And then getting into step work, I realized there's like some inner child trauma that I had to heal way back when, because there's a series of events that happened in repetition over courses of decades. I didn't get clean until I was in my early 30s. And, you know, I started using when I was like 15, I think. So there's a decade and a half of events there that all stem back. And through the course of step work, I figured that out. But so I go to a bunch of different rehabs. And the only reason I'm kind of going this far into it is just to talk about service. And this is why we're here today, is just the willingness for people to have service. And I remember the last time I went to treatment, H and I came into this facility on a Sunday night, and there was a particular gentleman that Michelle talked about that brought a tear to my eye. I almost got thrown out of the rehab because I was in detox, and I'm like, I'm going to that meeting. They're like, no, you can't, you're in detox. I'm like, these are people that I know, like, I just need a hug. And, you know, I manipulated the system to get into that meeting, and I'm glad I did. That man is extremely near and dear to me today, and I haven't been able to hug him in a while, and I miss that. I miss hugs from everybody, but there's particular people that, whether it's a geographical distance or some other things that keep us apart from each other, there's just those hugs that feel different, man. It hits different, and he's one of them. So yeah, I'll get emotional. It's gonna happen, bear with me. This is an emotional experience for me, but all right, so the how of the project, or the whole program, is like what I've been taught, and that's the other thing I'll say, like, everything I come up with here is not original. These are things that I've taught, I've read, it's my interpretation of it. If it directly conflicts with something your sponsor says, please don't listen to me. Listen to your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, please get one, listen to them, whatever. You know, everything that I know, just like our basic text says, is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth. So what I've been taught is the how repeats, you know, the honesty in step one that it takes to admit that you're powerless and your life is unmanageable ties in with the open-mindedness, and two, to come to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity ties into the willingness, and three, to make the decision. Then it repeats. So the honesty it takes to get into that four, fearless and moral inventory, and four, ties into the open-mindedness that it takes in five to share that with somebody. That ties into the willingness in six to look at your defects, really six and seven. You get into the honesty of seven, like, do I really want these things removed or not? That's a process. Deal with that. You get into the open-mindedness of making a list in eight. You get into the willingness in nine to actually make those amends. Then it repeats back again. 10 is your 10th step inventory that is pretty simple. You think about where your feet are, where your heart is, where your mouth is, where your head is. I just oversimplified a very tough step that is really, really hard. You get into the open-mindedness of 11, talking about prayer and meditation, improving your conscious contact. That's a journey, which is kind of cool, and it repeats, it has a lot of symbolism to my second step. And then you get into 12, practicing the willingness to practice these things in all our affairs, and most importantly, helping somebody else. So, you know, these things tie in, and so mine would be like 2, 5, 8, and 11, I think, if I did the math right. So the open-mindedness in step 2 was my favorite step. It has to do with like a transformation that happened in my life at that time. It has to do with the first time I worked with a particular sponsor. It has to do with a lot of different things, but you can't work step two without step one. So I'm going to go back into that. And I heard like all this slick shit that people would say in meetings, like step one's the only thing you have to do perfect. So I worked it like a homework assignment. I read the question. I'm like, what would my sponsor want me to say to this, but not like to answer the question, but not have him ask me anything because I really don't want to tell him. So I would answer those things very surface level, very like methodically, without much spirit or heart or emotion. So getting into step two, I had to dive back into step one. After I worked my first step, my sponsor moved me on to the second step, and then he and I had a bit of a falling out, and I decided to move to a different guy as a sponsor. He's an amazing guy. Last time I talked to him was on my wedding day, which was also the same day that I celebrated 8 years clean, and that phone call meant more than he knew. It was just like, hey, I'm proud of you. Those things, and that's what I needed to hear, man. That was really powerful. But working, so having done a first step with a different person, I don't know if that's how everybody does it, but we went back over step one a little bit, and then we get into two. So to admit that I need to be restored to sanity means that I need to admit that I was insane, right? So backing it up through that process and talking to him about some of the things that made me understand that I was powerless and that my life was unmanageable was an eye-opening experience for me. Because like I said, I had this gradual love affair with the chemical that it made the slow burn of my spirit unrecognizable to me. I could look in the mirror and I didn't see how big of a shitbag I had become. One, because I was in the grip of addiction, and I remember this one particular moment where I had a conscience through my using, I just didn't really listen to it. But I remember this one particular moment, standing at my sister's house, I'll have to make an amends for this, holding a landscape brick in front of her big picture window, and I'm like, are you really gonna fucking do this? You're gonna smash her window and go through it. And then like a split second later, my disease is like, hell yeah, you are. And I threw the brick through the window. I went through the window. I stole whatever, I don't know, probably like checks and jewelry and whatever I could find, I don't know. And I went and got high. And so things like that aren't anything that came up in my first step. Like the unmanageability is that like, oh, I can't keep a job, or I'm back at 32 years old in my parents' basement shooting dope and trying to wash out cottons and like weird shit like that is what I had in my first step. He takes me all the way back to like this spiritual death that I was slowly dying inside. So the open-mindedness that I had to have to admit that I was insane so I can get restored to sanity was like a process. So that was the easy part. What he prepared me for through the open-mindedness of two is to prepare for the willingness in three to make the decision. So he ties it all together, and I love this guy. And like I said, there's some repetition as things go on, but the process of admitting I was insane and the restoration to sanity in two was a lot to me about like finding a path. I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I said this once, it was a really polarizing thing. I said I grew up Catholic, so I'm not religious anymore. And like half the room laughed and the other half was like, what does he mean by that? Or offended. What I come to find out was like the half that laughed like grew up Catholic and the other half was kind of like found religion later in life. So it was interesting. It was an interesting dialogue. The God that I grew up with was like shameful and something I feared and all of that. So even at one point in my recovery, I claimed I was an atheist. You know, I felt like, I guess at that stage, everything had to have a label. So, and that kind of sounded hip, slick, and cool, I guess, to say that I was an atheist. I don't know. I don't really think I understood what it was. What I do know now is I was confused. That's all it was. I did not understand, like, what a higher power was, what our requirement for a higher power was. Definitely didn't understand that. And what I learned about atheism is it doesn't believe in anything. My particular opinion at that time was I didn't know what I believed. Believe in everything. I just wanted people to believe in something. I don't care what it is. That's kind of where I'm at today. But the process of finding a higher power, you know, our literature tells us that it has to be loving, caring, and greater than ourselves. So, you know, same, like I heard some slick shit in the room, like I don't care if it's a doorknob or this or that. And, you know, I probably even repeated some of that stuff at some point, like in a rehab. And what I know today is that doesn't work for me. Like what I say my higher power is love. We can call it the universe, you can call it a lot of different things. But what I know about that, like I can't name it to any one physical thing, like say it's a doorknob. If I'm walking up to that door and my hands are full, or that could be a metaphor, like I'm spiritually walking up to my higher power and my hands are full, the doorknob's not going to open itself, or that doorknob breaks or whatever. Like those are the things that I looked for in Narcotics Anonymous to let me out, for me to stick a needle back in my arm. What I understand today is that, like, it's, you know, you could talk about like a tree. That tree could die, fall over, get struck by lightning. It's a very small sampling of one particular thing. Now maybe it's all the trees. All the trees is an extremely powerful thing. You know, these trees take carbon dioxide, they produce oxygen, they are beautiful to look at in the fall. Some trees bear fruit. Like you're looking at a much larger sampling of things. Raindrops, that's something I was thinking about earlier. It's never the first raindrop. Like anybody that's ever danced in the rain, it's never the first raindrop that like makes me happy or giddy. The first one is always like, oh shit, are the windows open in the car? What kids' toys are out back? This is gonna screw up my work schedule. You know, all of these millions of thoughts. And then after a while, like if you have kids, sometimes they love to dance in the rain or jump in puddles, those types of things. It's not the first raindrop, it's all of the raindrops. You know, so what I know today is like the love of NA is what kept me in the rooms, and that's what I have as my higher power. Some people embody that love better than others. There's some people that I look at and learn, like, that's how I don't want to act. There's others that, like, I take small samples of. But that's the open-mindedness, like, of understanding I can learn something from everybody and understanding, like, Michelle talked about my process. What I knew about religion when I came in, or, like, my... See, she was talking about like going from here to here on certain things. I was like had this narrow, blinder view of religion when I came into this fellowship. And now it's this wide perspective or spectrum that like, I have less of a clue about God today than I did before. I just know that shit's powerful. And what we do in here is something that I've never seen duplicated anywhere in life. There's truly miracles that happen with these 17-cent key tags or whatever they are.
If we wish.
Yeah. 60 cents now, right?
I think
they're 60, yeah. But still. You know, it's symbolic of our journey. And there's reasons like, you know, they're 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. The one of the home groups I had in Pittsburgh, see, I got clean and was not welcome in my parents' house in Ebensburg anymore. So I had to find a place to live. So I went to a recovery house in Pittsburgh, and you know, to stay there I had to get a home group and a sponsor and all of that stuff. So I was forced into like the foundation of a program. And I bounced around to a couple different home groups, but I found this one on Sunday mornings in Pittsburgh. That had been adapted from an old school meeting. It used to be called Sunday Go to Meeting in the South Side. It then moved up to Brookline. They changed names. There was a couple people that were real instrumental in starting it. But one of the polarizing things about this home group was the hug line. Sometimes there'd be 70 people deep in this hug line, and to get through clean time might take 20 minutes. And people were like, we need to cut out readings, we need to do this, we need to do that. And I talked to my sponsor, my second sponsor, George J. from Pittsburgh, and he explained to me like that flickering spirit that we have. And sometimes a hug can just really, man, reignite the flame. And it doesn't mean like the guy with 3 days clean has the flickering spirit. Sometimes it's me with a year clean, whatever the time frame is. Like I get it, I was just talking to a good friend of mine yesterday. He's got about like 5 years clean and he hit like a plateau. I'm like, that's kind of typical, man. Like get it back to basics, like strip it down to the absolute essentials and remember like why you're here, why we are here as a group and what we do as a group. You know, nothing that we do is represented individually. All of this has to do with open-mindedness because I'm taking advice from a sponsor. I wasn't really cool with that previously. You know, I looked at the steps as like optional. We had a really good speaker Friday night at my home group, Mike from Johnstown, and he talked about like he did the first time he did the steps was in like 10 minutes and it was really disastrous. I related to that because I was like, yeah, I'll take like, well, you know, I didn't do all 12 and I manipulated them like, make a list of persons we had harmed. Fuck that, I'll make a list of people that harm me. You know, so change that all around, not understanding what that was about. So, you know, the open-mindedness of following the guidance of a sponsor was new to me. It's still sometimes, like I've changed sponsors what some people would call a lot in my 8 years. I bounced between these two guys for like 4 years in Pittsburgh for differing reasons. And I've had some like amazing men as sponsors. And what I know is the amount of freedom I get from the step work is directly proportionate to the amount of effort that I put in and the honesty that I put that is driven by my pen. Has nothing to do with that. Like, George J. is an amazing sponsor. Danny L. is an amazing sponsor. Robin B. is an amazing sponsor. My sponsor today I picked a couple years ago. Life changed for me. I've got a 3-year-old running around. That was a huge dynamic shift in my life. For a number of reasons that don't tie in with open-mindedness. Probably one of the most narrow-minded parts of my life is parenting. Probably the place that I need to be the most open-minded, I'm not, but I'm practicing. And I don't always understand it, like talking about that childhood trauma or like just this set of principles I inherit from the generations that raised me sometimes have me stuck in ways and I don't know it until it comes out of my mouth. Thankfully for that 10th step, we have the opportunity to make those things right. And it doesn't say if we are wrong, it says when we are wrong, and then we promptly admit it. So it happens a lot with my partner and I, both very strong people, where I'll have to walk away so I can calm down. I try not to act in emotion. Because that's when like my ego and things get hurt. And so what I know for me is like, and I'm going on a tangent here, but when I feel small, spiritually, mentally, when I feel underappreciated, unappreciated, whatever, and this has nothing to do with external people. This is an internal feeling that I get from an interpretation of something that was said, something that was done, whatever, I get hurt. I'm a very delicate person. And the best way for me to process that is to remove myself from the emotion of it, process it, and then move forward. Not always so great at that, but that is something that's come up through step work and something that I have to be open-minded into figuring it out because I don't want to do any harm in this process. So anyway, the open-mindedness of listening to a sponsor for me is very critical. It was kind of cool when Liz said they added sponsorship to the list of topics. That's my, one of my favorite IPs. But the process of like finding my higher power was critical in step two, because I really didn't know what I believed in, and I had to do that to get ready for three. Looking at how it repeats in five. So the first time I ever did a fifth step, I was sponsored by a guy in Pittsburgh who got, he's got 30 some years clean now. If you got clean when he got clean, you had very little, if any, NA option. So he started in the other fellowship. But it's just a way that people in this particular family work step five. So I did all the writing. And he said, all right, now you got to make an appointment to do your fifth step. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Sorry, I'll try not to cuss. I apologize. So the way they do this is you have to make an appointment at a monastery and do a fifth step with a priest. Super weird. But I had to be open-minded, right? So I walk in and I'm sitting there with my step working guide, my notebook, all of that. This guy's in the other fellowship. And he walks in and he's like, close all that up. I was like, thank God. And we talked for like an hour and a half. But when I left there, I didn't get a burning bush feeling. There wasn't like a huge sense of relief, all of that. There was like so much stuff I was glad we didn't talk about. There were a couple things that I really wanted to talk about to distract him from the other things I didn't want to talk about. But he took me down this path, and it was a weird exercise. So about 2 years ago, I switched to this new guy, and every year for the last 5 or 6 years, or maybe longer, I guess, I go to this men's retreat in Pittsburgh, and I've connected with this guy for like the last 5 years. Really loving, caring dude, somebody who I genuinely connect with. He shows me how to show vulnerability, but still remain like I feel like I'm purposeful. And so a couple years ago I worked 4 and 5 with him at this spiritual retreat, and it was a whole different feeling, man. And I was extremely open-minded through it, but it was very much a searching. I don't know how fearless it was. There was still a lot of fear for me to share some of these things, because when I worked my original 4-step, there were things there, like I think at the end of the step is like, is there anything else that's left off the list that you didn't write about, or blah, 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 whatever that was. And I had a couple things on there in my brain. I didn't write them. And we talked about every one of them. There was moments where he would stop me, and he was challenging my open-mindedness. He would stop me and we would repeat mantras, and the biggest one that I remember is, I am enough. And I say that to myself a lot these days because, I'm an addict. I suffer from low self-esteem and low self-worth. So to tell myself or to reinforce to myself that I am enough in this moment right now, I am enough, is something that I have to hear pretty regular. To not have these self-defeating things pop back up. So, that can directly relate to the fifth step. But that was a really cool, my second sponsor, George, when I wrote that, I was having trouble with 4, and it was really, it felt painful at the time. And, he repeated something to me that I've heard a lot since then and have said to people. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, nobody's died from doing a 4-step, but a lot of people have died from not doing a 4-step. And that's powerful, man. That's the honesty that it takes to write that inventory is big. It talks about the how of the project, like with their program. I keep saying that, sorry. The HOW in our readings, I think it's how it works, where it talks about, with these we are well on our way. Like, if you can't think of any other spiritual principles, like in 1, I needed honesty and surrender. Those two, like I had to have surrender to get me to my process. The open-mindedness and willingness in step 2 or something. But if you just kind of work on those 3 spiritual principles, that will get you pretty far. You know, the honesty to admit I have a problem, the open-mindedness to reach out for help, and the willingness to listen to that person. Now, here's what I'll say about, like, the way open-mindedness and willingness tie together. There's a lot of people in this fellowship. And there's, like, I have a solid core of men and women that I've been around that I love, respect, and cherish. And there's different pockets for each one. And this is why it takes events like this to connect with people geographically over such a big area that we have. Like, if you're only talking to two or three people and you're in early recovery or at any point in recovery and having these issues, you know, you might be doing a disservice to yourself. I mean, there's people like Lance who are, you know, I can go to Lance with anything and he seems to have experience or, you know, has a great network of people. You know, Edgar's another one, Rich is another one. These guys have been around 30 years. You know, but we have this solid core of people in what I would call middle recovery that really need to network. But I guess where I was going at, like the open-mindedness to the honesty to admit that I've got an issue, the open-mindedness to reach out for somebody to somebody for help, and then the willingness to follow that path. You know, one of our readings says that there's no advice givers or therapists or whatever. Be careful. There's some people that will act like it. You know, but you tie in with like a group of people who are doing service, who are doing this thing, and like they say, staying in the middle so they don't fall off the edge, and you develop a core of people that, you know, you can go to when things happen. You know, they say stick around, like your turn will come at something. So I know, like, if I'm in a situation about service, there's a certain group of people that I will go to and ask them, and then I have the willingness. So if I'm just like going to a meeting and spilling all my problems out there and getting all this unsolicited advice, it might be good advice, it might not be good advice, I don't know. But I don't have a problem sharing at a meeting, but I usually try to share with my solid group of dudes first. So reason being, like, one, I was taught this isn't Problems Anonymous, it's Narcotics Anonymous. Two is that we're a solution-based thing, you know. What we do is solution-based, and we help each other through these processes. And if you share about your problem, they want you to come back later and share about the solution. Show us that you got through it, whatever it is. And I don't like to share, so I just try and wait until I got it and talk about it. If you're having problems, by all means, share. Like, I've been sharing Friday night in there, and there's like, I don't know, 30 or 35 people, and I'll stand there until somebody says they had a burning desire to use. I'm like, somebody's lying. There's 30 people in this room, and nobody's wanted to use. Somebody's lying. At least one person is lying. I still have using thoughts. Nobody ever loses that, I don't think. I've lost a desire to use. However, these thoughts, like, they just leave my head faster. Open-mindedness is one of those things. Well, all the spiritual principles that I've learned so far in recovery they directly affect the amount of time between thought and action, if that makes any sense. When I'm being of service to the fellowship, going to my home group, talking to my sponsor, working steps, living in spiritual principles, all of those things, my time, the amount of time between all these crazy thoughts in my head and the action that follows it is a lot larger, longer, whatever you want to call it. This lovely pandemic has caused a lot of things in my brain to, like, you know, I felt very disconnected. I don't think I'm alone on this, but I felt very disconnected from the fellowship. Zoom meetings were really cool for like the first month. Then after that, I'm like, it's really cool that we still found a way to carry a message. I love that part of it. What I didn't understand until I happened to... Look, there were still meetings going on. I'd show up. I still don't know if it's the right thing to do, not the right thing to do, whatever. I just needed a fucking hug. I never really understood the value of a hug until it was removed from me. It almost felt like a jail sentence. Like, I was so disconnected from the people that I love. I'm living more in defect. Like, on Zoom meetings where a dude's like eating cereal, like kind of laying down with a bowl of cereal on his chest. Like, you're not going to do that in a meeting. Like a picnic, okay, everybody's eating, having fun, kids are running around, that's amazing. I love that. But like, the tendencies we have when we get comfortable are dangerous, right? You're showing up to meetings, there's a dude with no shirt on, he's got a background of Hawaii, and he's in, you know, somewhere not Hawaii. You know, it's just strange how we can quickly adapt in a good way and then turn it right into something messed up, you know. I also understand that what we do, there's a connection from spirit to spirit that has to be done in person. That's why I'm really excited, hopefully with all of these things lightening up, that we are able to get back into facilities for H&I. This all comes back to service. You know, I was excited to get involved from an area level. The first time I was at area with, like, I don't know, maybe a year clean or something, I was just telling my wife this on the way up. I went in and it was like a total ego buffet where just like people barking at each other from other sides of the room, and you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong, and like so many different pods of things. And then like fast forward a couple years, and I was just telling Howdy Joe this the other day, like I feel like I got dope fiended into a service position by like them playing on my ego. So I took a service position for H&I that I was able, like in that exact moment, to fulfill. But if I would have actually looked at the longer commitment that they asked me to make, I really wasn't able to do it. And like 6 months later, I had to resign without fulfilling my commitment. I felt shitty about that. But it was like that was one time open-mindedness didn't work in my favor, because I didn't get my ego out of the way. I didn't prey on it. They're like, oh yeah, you speak well, you'd be great at this position, you do this, you kind of do this for work and delegate and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm awesome, I'll do that. And it has nothing to do with me, man. I'm just whoever is that person in that seat is a facilitator, and that's all it is. And that was just to get me closer. One of the cool things, me and Lance and Bob S. went into the facility, that the last facility I went to, and we were able to get back through the doors to where we could touch more addicts, not physically. We could get back, that's what got us kicked out, I think. It's, to get back in and carry the message to the addicts who we know still need that. You know, so there was a learning process there. But this time around in service, what I'm getting at, extremely open-minded, and I feel like we have to get together as a group right now and regroup. It's like, you know, I lived in Texas for a while, and a hurricane came through, and it's like going outside after the hurricane. I feel like this is like the stage we're in, where we're just getting back outside after the hurricane, and we have to look around and be like, holy shit, okay, my yard isn't that bad, but my neighbor's is pretty messed up. Let's go help him. And that's what we've got to do, is gather around in service and figure out like how we get healthier as an area. We're losing meetings by sometimes no fault of our own. There's facilities that won't let us in at H&I. There's people, you know, jails are extremely restrictive, obviously, getting in and out. I talked to one of my buddies who's locked up in Camp Hill today. And just to like, for him to go to the hospital, to the emergency room, he had to quarantine for weeks when he came back. Like, the world's on its head right now. And what we have to understand is like, we do things better as a small sample than I've ever seen. And in this area, I feel, you know, Michelle said it, and you know, we said it, Lance said it yesterday. I feel very fortunate to be part of this area. Before I stayed clean, I went to meetings here, and the people that hugged me and that I connected with, a lot of them are still around. It's a heavy topic, man, but it's what we do here is pretty cool. I don't know how long I've been going for, but so what I will say is that, you know, it's truly an honor to serve this area, to serve Narcotics Anonymous. There is never a time that somebody asks me to speak that I get excited about it. I usually like to fly below the radar and just enjoy events like this, and now I think I can maybe enjoy it a little bit. I love seeing people here serving. I love the fact that there is a bunch of new people, new faces to me, that are serving the area and helping do things. I get excited about helping things like the retreat. It's the 25th anniversary, and you know, this is truly an honor and a privilege to just be part of something that saved my life. When I didn't really even want my life saved, I didn't even know how valuable a life could be at that point. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm starting to ramble. I am going to quit. I'm an addict. My name is Scott. I'm going to keep coming back. Woo!